Welcome to the Rumpus Room.
Hey, everybody. How's it going out there? It's the boys from the Midwest back kicking it here in the Rumpus Room. And let's hit them with the takeaway message of the day.
So how do you, let's just say, shoot a basketball at your best? Something that I've been thinking about because I've been doing that for my cardio workouts during the week is playing a little hoops. So I read this book that talks a lot about how you can basically take your brain and section it into two things. You got self one and self two. Self one is your thinking mind. It's the ability to kind of guide your behaviors. So if you think like, oh, I'm going to, you know, grab my mouse, and then you kind of move your hand and watch your hand. Or self two is the more, you could call it the subconscious. It's like the automatic behaviors that have been learned that are kind of habits. So I've been doing experiments with myself, and I've found that if I try to say like, oh, on this one, I'm going to aim farther, or I was a little longer, I'm going to use more legs, and you try to like get your body to do it, that you are not nearly as good. If you try to give your brain something to do, all right, oh, I'm going to be aware of my right elbow to see where it is when I shoot. So your brain goes to awareness versus thinking about powering your body. I am way better. Like, it is night and day. And it kind of goes back to, I remember getting in, let's just say, the zone of shooting. I had a couple games where I just went off and did really well. And I do not remember telling myself where to shoot. Like, oh, I'm going to hit this one in the back rim. It was just like, no, the ball just be in the air and in the basket. So I thought that was super cool. It actually can be translated to work, since that's probably 95% of my day is working. So in paying more attention to what the other person is feeling or doing, rather than thinking about what to say, you're trying to pay attention to the other person on the phone. So let's just say I'm having a sales conversation. What is their emotion right now? And letting the words come to you, rather than trying to execute on certain scripts. And I found I've been much, I would say, more original in my questions, and they land a lot better. And sometimes you come up with things that are a little off the wall, not like off the wall, but just a little out there. But it has been, I'm going to keep experimenting with it, but it's so far, it's been really good. It's been about a couple weeks of doing this. So I thought it was a good takeaway message, because something I've been focusing on is just trying to be more aware and not have my brain be the one that's acting. And so, you know, I remember there'd be really smart kids that would play sports and be really bad at them, because they would just like try to think like, I'm going to think the ball into the hoop, or I'm going to think my golf. So that's where golf is just like classic. You can see when somebody's thinking about their swing,
you can,
versus people just swinging.
Yep.
So I've been trying to take that to all aspects of my life, if I can, and just let the body go.
I like how that gave a name and a process to this idea that people have been trying to communicate in coaching forever and failing miserably.
Oh, man. I wish I had this when I was in high school, middle school. I mean, you can explain this to a 2-year-old, I'm excited about kind of coaching my little one and talking about this stuff and just giving him that knowledge. Cause I remember I had a really bad free throw streak in high school where I missed a bunch of free throws, and the coach was telling me, oh, try throwing
this,
it.
So it's thinking that
lower blah, blah, blah. Or like, instead of taking 4 dribbles, take 3 before you shoot, or jump when you shoot. Oh, it's like, no. Just let me shoot the dance. You know, it's just like,
yeah, just feel it, actually.
Is complete. What you should be doing. Yeah. Stop trying to think, just shoot the ball. And, you know, it's easy to say just shoot the ball, but actually giving it, like you said, a mental process. And I think awareness is
the secondary component, you know, of like the active thinking versus more of the, I'd say, intuitive or, you know, second process type of thinking is just way more easy to understand than like, I can hear my coaches right now being like, you know, you just got to relax. You got to get into the game, but you got to relax and you got to think about what you want to do and do the right thing. Use your mind, but like, don't think too hard. And it's like, okay, like, let's go, guys. How do break I do on that? Three.
How do I do that? My brain is spitting crap at me constantly.
I know 1,000 words. I'm in fifth grade. You know, like.
Oh, why are you so nervous and screaming at me, man? You know,
does this matter?
Yeah. All does I want work? Is a freezy after the game right now, man. Just tell me if we're going to have freezies or freaking orange slices. If we're having orange slices, I don't care.
Do we have zebra cakes after this? Whose mom is bringing the treats?
Yeah, who's mom? Oh, dang it.
The best treats.
Oh, Derek's mom. She never brings anything good. Oh, crap.
Oh, we're going to get kind bars again. Oh, shit.
Oh, God. Ooh, we're going to get kale chips. Oh, no, it's the weird family. Yeah.
Everybody gets hummus. I bet today that those things are off the wall. I bet they had to stop doing that because...
Yeah.
Today's proclivity towards dietary restrictions. Can you sure. imagine bringing the treat at the end of the game and being like, okay, here's the one for the gluten-free kids.
Yeah, we got gluten-free, we got dairy-free, we've got vegan, we've got sugar-free.
We've got our kosher over here.
Kosher.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man. We have kids that don't like to have glucose spikes, so we got to...
We have our like, keto over here.
Keto. So we have 10 kids. I have 10 different things to bring. Yeah. It is insane.
Yeah, so then everybody's mom,
so
for sure, and then everybody's mom or dad actually ends up bringing it their own for their kid and then like giving it, like we already made that mistake at a birthday party. Rex is dairy free and gluten free, and like people are always like, oh, how do you know? It's like, well, first of all, it's pretty effing obvious for both of them.
Diarrhea before.
You give him an ice cream cone and it's gonna come out in the diaper and look like somebody just basically took the thing and put it in the diaper. There's zero processing happening.
I think there's something wrong.
It's just cooler, or it's just warmer. That's it.
It went from a slightly solid to a liquid.
He's got it goes in cold and it comes out warmer. That's all that happens.
It's because he told me, okay? He said, hey, Dad, I'm dairy free.
Yeah, he told me, actually, Dad, I think I have a lactose reaction.
I think I'm reacting to lactose. Stop giving me this stuff. I can't.
Dad, it looked like you just poured a bottle of milk in my diaper.
It must be all that dairy that I've been eating.
You might want to think twice about that next time, Pops. Well,
these two-year-olds these days are really launching threes over there. Oh, man. You know, it's because they have great moms. They're listening to their mom's blog posts, so it's just...
Next he's gonna tell us what his astrology chart is. I'm a Leo.
Oh, I'm in a bad mood because
Venus is retrograding. Fuck. Get out of here, guys. I'm gonna be emotional.
I need some space. I'm an emotional wreck.
Oh goodness.
Oh man, this is good way to start.
There's going to be a lot of stuff flying around on the internet that our kids are going to be exposed to that we'll have no idea about. Like,
oh man.
You know, so, and the gluten thing, he like breaks out into a rash. I mean, it's pretty straightforward, but,
the whole
child sports, I can't wait. And I'm also terrified about that chapter of life.
Yeah. The stuff you hear about with coaches. Oh my gosh.
I just saw a video earlier where there's this kid who, it's an app called Home Court. And it's a AI, it's a virtual reality game where you have the iPad film you And then it puts little, like, you know, indicators on the screen, like, you know, a little square or whatever, and you're supposed to then dribble the ball over to that circle, and then it gives you a point, and then it adds it up. And so it's like virtual reality assisted, or augmented reality is what they call it. Yeah. AR.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's augmented reality basketball practice. I mean, that's going to be commonplace stuff. I'm sure it's, you know, just starting on the cusp, and I happen to just be exposed to it, but there'll be a lot of interesting digitally assistive products towards all that. And then honestly, like, let's just take it to the next level. The NIL deals, the Nick Saban, you know, on the like,
oh my God,
buying data from Sport Engine in order to recruit, you know, I mean, that's just not very far away if they're not already doing it.
No, you know, just from, let's just say, working, how valuable data is and how much people are buying your data that you have no idea about. I mean, talk about, like, pharmaceutical companies, health insurance companies, everybody's buying data on you. Mm-hmm. That's why credit cards can basically give you everything for free, all these points. It's like they sell a bunch of your data too. So it's just crazy. All those clicks that you do.
Everything. So get the Brave browser.
Yep, Brave. We're on it right now.
I love that. To harken back to your initial point about the feeling, I find it really to be apparent in a simple game like darts for me.
Yes, because, exactly.
I find that the phrase I say in my head that is almost always going to guarantee that I do not hit the target is I try to invoke this sense of, like, possibility. I say I can hit the 18 and I, like, never hit it for whatever reason. I, like, try to, but I think that is very much like I'm trying to invoke a mental state in process one thinking, as opposed to, like, process two thinking, which would be, you know, feel sort of your elbow and, like, your release point or your feet flat on the floor or something, and then put it all together.
Yeah, your balance or something. Yeah. How is my balance? Like, it's actually gotten me to enjoy more things that I'm doing throughout the day, to just try to experiment with, you know, like, I don't know. There's just a lot of different examples of it, of picking your kid up. I mean, you just can really start to become more aware and you feel like you're in much more control. Because you're not trying to actually, you know, invoke all this authority over everything. It's just kind of more of a awareness game. And I think your ego gets very scared of that type of non-control, because it kind of realizes that there's, I mean, that kind of the books that I've been reading, and really the deeper side of it is there's a fear that there's kind of this huge level of understanding and knowledge that's under the surface that your subconscious kind of can tap into. You know, there's just a whole, like, we don't even really know what information we're working with, where your ego, your brain just thinks, like, I know it all. And so I'm in control. And when it loses control, it gets afraid. So that's kind of the battle and why people choke. I mean, this is choking. I mean, if you want control, you know, I want to control this rather than, like, I'm just going to let her fly.
I always have this thought, because in times like now where it's March Madness and you're seeing these people try to make these last second shots and win the game with everything on the line and whatever. And when I used to coach, one of my favorite things to do was during a timeout and people would be super dysregulated, I would do a breathing exercise. I would have people, like, okay, just everybody exhale, 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 and kind of walk people through a small coordinated breathing exercise.
Yep.
And I'm still amazed that nobody is doing that on the more advanced levels. You still get into a huddle and then the coach barks some orders at you and then you all break. It's like, when will somebody just realize? And maybe they do that through words, you know, guys like Phil Jackson.
That's what Phil Jackson used to do.
Yeah.
There's another coach in the NCAA tournament that they they highlighted, which I think you would like, is they were talking about, or they were basically, they were down by like 15, and it was a coach, I think it was from Furman or some smaller state place, that upset in the first round, and then the second round they were playing again. And he said, guys, where are our energy giving behaviors? I call them EGBs. It's like high-fiving your teammate, diving after loose balls, you know, trying to basically influence the energy of the game and not really. And he was, and this is like, they're down. They didn't talk about strategy once. It was like, I need more, you guys to put more energy into the game. High five. I need you to pick your butt, your guys up. I don't see that stuff. And he was like pointing out specific instances. And I thought that was cool, because I was like, I remember in these games when you would get your energy up, your team would just start to roll. But you start to go down and you just feel dejected, and then you wouldn't perform. And you'd see, you know, and they say like, oh, keep your head up. But it's like, how do you incite that type of energy? So I love that. I think that guy, they've been saying he's been getting some high praise from a lot of bigger schools. So I think that would be good. I mean, the University of Minnesota will never hire him as their basketball coach, because that's too logical. That would make too much sense. But I think they're, that's something I think that will be the future of coaching. I really do. And this is like 10 to 15 years out. I don't think we're really prepared for that type of coaching right now, I think that's the future.
That's another one of the things that I was trying to understand about the Super Bowl this year, is everybody was talking about the Eagles coach as a very emotive coach. And you got Andy Reid on the other sidelines, who's really not. And people were drawing conclusions to like, well, you have to think about the younger generation who's gotten into the NFL. We now put on turnover chains in college to celebrate a particular act and like highlight an individual's contribution, you know, to a degree
that normally wouldn't get highlighted.
Like the idea of a turnover chain is just ridiculous, but that's the type of like additional energy that is required in a generation that is showered with instant gratification, instant feedback. And I've always wondered like how the transition of the old guard coaching of like Bill Belichick and whatever is going to translate to these younger guys who, you know, the psyche of a person who's 20 years old today is just really different than the psyche of somebody who was 20 years old 10 years ago. And
yeah, I think the advent of cell phones has been the biggest change for that, for sure.
For sure. And what, how do the systems respond to, you know, Gen Z as being the primary athlete that now is going through the NCAA tournament? I don't know. It's not something I really understand, but it was a question I had about like, is this more emotive coaching style going to be something that appeals to younger guys? You know, the Eagles obviously had a lot of success, but weren't able to get it done, whatever. It doesn't really matter. It's just an N of one, but like, that'll be an interesting kind of, evolution of sports is, you know, where does that sports psychologist go? And I think the energy giving behavior is such a fantastic idea. We'll see. Any other interesting notes you want to hit on here? I suppose we could talk a little bit about the political theater that's going on. I just want to call out one thing that has caught my attention, and it's the idea of this term liberal elites, and how the Republicans are doing a really good job of pinning that phrase and using it, mostly propagated by Trump, frankly. But I think that the potential for that, I think it'll be an important term come the midterm, come the next election, because 24. Because of the importance of the middle class. And if the left keeps doing these things like bank bailouts and stuff, it's going to be really tough to have that narrative of them being like the supportive party for the middle class. So it's just something I noted. I want to get it on record as like, you know, if it becomes a thing, I can point to this episode and be like, we called it, you know, sort of like we called Trump years.
Yeah, we called Trump.
His first one.
Called, you know, we talked about the lab leak. That's another one I'll talk about later. But it's like all these things we've been talking about, I think they've, you can kind of just sense it. They're just like pushing these agendas straight down your throat. And I don't pay much attention to the media, but the little bit that you do, you can kind of get the gist of what they want you to believe.
Yeah. The propaganda machines continue to pump out stuff. It's just, there's just no way around it. And,
no, and I think we can, I mean, you want to, we can go into this whole bank run idea of the SVB bailout and this whole thing, you know, and I think a lot of people have a bunch of different opinions on, you know, why is this important? But, you know, I've been kind of thinking a little bit about how this is going to impact everything. And it just, like, hey, if you want to make a bunch of money, just go into banking and try to make his, you know, just make risky bets. And it seems like you'll be bailed out. And that's the scary thing, is just how this money continues to flow into these systems. And for people that do run these smaller businesses, you're up against a lot more than you think. You know, there's just a whole lot working to keep these things around, because they're so worried about it all crashing down, which that's the guise, I guess, of everything is, well, if one fail, they'll all fail. And then the whole trust in the banking system is gone. And it's really a difficult thing. But this bank run was interesting, because I heard about a lot of people that before, when you'd have a bank run, you can't immediately go on your phone and transfer money out of there. So the bank run in 2008 apparently was pretty long, like 10 days. And this was 24 hours.
Wow.
So it's like that the quickness of that creates a bunch of risk in the industry. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, one bad tweet or something, you know, it can really roll. Or even a, you know, there's some thoughts of a coordinated effort by somebody to say, hey, everybody, all VCs that have a bunch of money, just start yanking money out of there. Mm-hmm. I thought that was, I think that's kind of a scary, not a scary, but just a new reality.
It most certainly is increasing velocity of money. The public perception being more subject to manipulation because of information, the lack of, I don't know, accountability for business owners. Personally, I was hoping that the approach would be let them fail. I mean, let them all die, and let's just have the reckoning and then just rebuild. But like, nope, the charade continues. And it's really easy to say that. It's so easy to be like, you know, that's the better strategy. Who knows, right? One of my finance professors, actually, when I was coming out of college, he was talking about the 2008 bank bailout, and he was like, you know, I support it because honestly, it would have been so much worse than you could possibly imagine if they didn't do that, that you all should be really happy that it happened. And there's definitely some truth to that. Again, I, you know, wish that there were accountability, and, you know, people are bad at their jobs and they get to not have them anymore. You know, we'll see. But anyway, that's definitely hot news that we hope we learn from as human beings. But for some reason, it does not seem like we're going to anytime soon.
No.
Should we hit the clickbait of the week?
Yeah, let's do it. So I alluded to mine already, but I've been there's a group that I follow called Breaking Points, and it's on YouTube, and they basically are like the anti-mainstream media. So of course I dig their stuff, but they have had some really interesting stuff on the COVID-19 lab leak denials that are still happening to this day. And all of the theories, and they're showing clips of past CNN broadcasts. And so they kind of just have this mishmash of, look at how crazy this is, and it still is going on. So that's been my clickbait, because I am always interested in seeing this type of, you know, kind of, I'll just call it propaganda type thing. So it's been, that's been one of my things that it's hard for me to not click on when I'm at a weak state.
Yeah. There's this subreddit that's called Science Uncensored, and that always gets my attention, because the lab leak stuff is, and they've been talking about, you know, the coordinated effort, the lack of efficacy around the vaccine, the negative impacts that nobody really evaluated. Just really, really unfortunate stuff. And I specifically recall receiving, you know, negative feedback from suggesting that, like, the lab leak theory is, you know, more probable than
from the friends market,
yeah. From eating a bat.
Yeah. So there's a coronavirus facility across the street
that is working on that makes these viruses, actually has millions.
We're still saying it's a bat, right?
And they had previous history of having poor vaccine.
Yeah, they got written up by having bad container, whatever.
We're doubling down on somebody ate a bat.
At a wet market. Okay. This makes a bunch of sense. I'm glad we're running with this one here. Okay.
You can tell, though, that, like, we've made it far enough out from the initial thing that now you can be honest with the American public. And since there's enough time that has elapsed and people are just so bored of the subject, you can bring out the actual truth. And, you know, it's a blip on the radar. Like, the people don't even give a shit. And it's just amazing that we accept this. Frankly.
Yep. Yeah, it is. And there's, you know, there's really not a lot of accountability, maybe, is it?
But yeah, I hope Fauci is indicted. Like, I really do.
Hard to indict Trump right now. So it'd be interesting to see if they could get some, you know, let's just say Trump goes into office, or somebody from the Republican state. If I were Fauci,
I'd be afraid.
A little afraid. He's going to target numero uno, much big, like, I told you so moment.
Yeah, we'll see. Again, you know, seeking justice or wishing for justice is a foolish effort. Yeah, exactly. But we can always hope. My clickbait of the week has been tuning into Formula One races and Formula One tech videos. I find the technology component to be really interesting, because all these teams are developing to try and get their cars up to speed with, like, the champions. And there's a couple different channels that do, like, technical specification breakdowns, and they talk about the aerodynamic packages that the cars roll out. And I just find it really fascinating, because it's much more scientific than, you know, just, I think, many other sports. So I've enjoyed some of those technical specification videos. The downside is this year Red Bull is going to absolutely run away with the trophy. They're a second faster than any car on the track. So it's going to be a pretty boring ride here, with Verstappen just running away with the championship. And all the other, so the it'll only be exciting if, like, major crashes and technical problems emerge within the cars that like plague performance, which is a natural part of Formula One. But also there's a bone in my body that has suspicion around how these things come out, because I swear there's always like something that occurs to keep the race interesting. And it's always kind of like, do I believe that Verstappen's power just suddenly cut off during his qualifying lap such that he has to start at 15? Maybe. Is somebody like hitting the kill switch because they're like, shit, if he wins this, he's just going to beat everybody by 45 seconds tomorrow and nobody's going to care. Yeah. So like kill his powertrain, you know, like I don't think it's that far outside of the realm of possibility that level of manipulation could happen, especially in that sport that it's fraught with like technical complexities. The other sports just have the officiating, you know, which obviously
we've seen that go to the whole FIFA soccer thing was a big deal. Do you see that with Barcelona?
I haven't actually. I was thinking about the whole Seth Blatter like stuff beforehand, but what was the Barcelona?
Well, Barcelona basically paid a consulting company millions of dollars that apparently was former referees. And so they're thinking that was like a shell company. You know, it's like four former referees have this own company, which they're paying like, I don't remember the number, $20 million, big number, basically, for consulting. And then they all of a sudden were noticing they were getting a bunch of calls in a bunch of games. So Barcelona, I'm pretty sure it was Barcelona, was under a little bit of fire on that. It's like, well, of course that happens.
Yeah, it is amazing.
Happens in the NBA.
What power and influence can do, what money can do. Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
No kidding. So that's been my clickbait of the week, is turning into some of those races, tuning into some of those races. There was the kickoff 2 weeks ago, and then Saudi Arabia just happened. And if you want to see a funny video, watch this Saudi Arabian national anthem. They had a marching band perform the Saudi Arabian national anthem, and it sounded a lot like a middle school band. it was like, picture how good your middle school band was blasting the Star Spangled Banner. That's what it sounded like. That's exactly what it sounded like. It was terrible.
Oh my gosh.
And the F1 drivers were trying not to laugh on the track.
Oh really?
Oh yeah. People were like, whoa, what is happening? Because it was like, you know, Saudi Arabia, they're extraordinarily wealthy. You know, you've got all this.
They're the wealthiest of any. Yeah.
It's not even, you can't even say that Saudi Arabia is wealthy to like act like it's in the realm of possible to understand the magnitude behind what's happening there. And they have this band that just was terrible, terrible, terrible. So it was kind of funny to. I guess they haven't invested in their musical programs quite yet.
Yeah. Well, they will.
They certainly will. You better believe next year when they do that, it's going to be amazing. Most of those musicians might be from North Africa, but
they're going to be from outside. Yeah. Just like their soccer coaches.
Just like how they built the stadiums and in Qatar for the World Cup. That was anyway. But who's talking about the human rights records of the United States? You know, we obviously have everybody's got their issues. anyway, so how about lightning strikes?
I can go first. So I've been unpacking a little bit of this thing in my head around work being bad, where, you know, how we all think that all work is something we have to do. And that's something I'm really trying to change around. Why do I think of that? And so there's an exercise that I did that tries to go at, of course, like the origins of it, but trying to substitute, you know, different goals. And it really helped me just think about doing work and why you do it, what's important, what's not. Why do I have these aversions in certain ways? And obviously the obvious one is people tell you what to do at work. So you have a little bit of, at certain work, you're doing it for other people. So there's a resistance that's inside of you no matter what. I think if you have a kid, or, you know, you can kind of see that resistance when you try to tell them exactly what to do. We're starting to see more of that as our little one gets older, but there's definitely this resistance. So I think that's a big thing, but it really helped me unpack that even further to just say, why do I even have this like belief or view, and how deep is it? So that's helped me clear out, I think, a little bit of the old mindset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My little one just started saying working, like, 'cause he, you know, comes into the office and then will have a little smirk on his face and be like, working. And it's just the gravity of like the decisions that you make become so apparent when you have a kid in the mix, because you're like, oh, this has an impact on him. And it's like really noticeable. And it's just, here's him showing me that it's like having an impact. And so you said one other thing about telling your child to do something and them, you know, fighting you or listening. And we've had a week where he has been just a pistol for whatever reason, like definitely getting into that terrible two type of like, I know what I want to do and I want to do it and I don't want to be told no. And I caught myself just being like, Rex, do this, like much more directive. And it's just such a bad strategy.
It is.
One of the things that works or is much better is like instead of the Rex, don't do that, or kid, don't do that. Like, you should be like, hey, can you try this? Like, you know, instead of banging on the glass window with a hammer, maybe you can hit the sofa. instead of being like, don't hit the window with a hammer, you'd be like, hey, Rex, maybe you can hit this. It'll make a different sound, right? Like,
or that's look just at how fun it is to hit the sofa.
Yeah. It bounces so high off the sofa. Can't you see this? It doesn't shatter.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I know.
So the redirect is something I was just like, oh. But when you're exhausted, it's so hard to be like, hey, you know what, little kid? Think about this.
I know.
So constant reminder of me trying to emphasize that more. Lightning strike for me is I've been – this is something that's I've known for or like has been a tool in my tool belt for a very long time, but something I'm returning to because of how easy it is to access. And I have a lot of people that I work with that I struggle to like want to engage with. I'm forced to engage with them. And one of the simplest ways to develop a sense of like compassion for somebody is just for me to realize that this individual is a mother, they're a daughter, they're a son, they're a father, they're somebody's child at one point. You know, they were not like this. Like, they still have that level of pure being a person who, you know, deserves like respect and compassion and love and, you know, appreciation. They can still be an idiot in this instance, and like I can disagree with them, but I shouldn't write them off per se. I should still give them like the respect of like acknowledging that they're an individual and there's more to people than just their work output. And there's more to people than how they present in these formal settings. And so if I think you're wasting my time, I'm usually fairly dismissive. And there's a certain point in my life where I would love to get to it where I can just be like, hey, this is good context and let's be done talking, you know. But there are other ways to approach, like, even when people are wrong, just accepting that, like, you know, everybody's trying their best, like straight up, they're just always trying their best. And, you know, so I've been coming back to that idea of like, you know, everybody is somebody's son, daughter, mother, brother, whatever. Like, and so it's an easy way to rest in compassion if dealing with a difficult person.
Yeah. Try to humanize them a little bit, make them more relatable for you so you can see them as probably more as they are than what you're you're currently doing. I know I struggle with that too. It is. It's easy. It's an easy trap to fall into. So that's a good, I'd say, shortcut to continue to think about.
And let's round it out with some chicken soup. You went both first, so I'll take this one. And again, you know, forgive all the, we're going to have to turn this into the raising children's podcast, but it becomes such a huge component of your life when, you know, I was just remarking about that with my wife. I mean, it's difficult to have friendship relationships with people who don't have children just because you're not in similar mindsets for anything. You're not on similar programs. It has nothing to do with your lack of like kinship with them. It's merely a function of like the mental like
life rhythm.
Yeah, the life rhythm. Yep, totally different. So many of our statements here are influenced so much by our kids. My little one has recently started really smiling with his teeth, and he has these kind of, he has a really wide mouth and really quite like, he has a huge head. He's in the 98th percentile of head sizes for his age, and he's in the 86th percentile for height. So he's a big guy, but he's got a basketball on top of his shoulders. And he hits that head on everything. I mean, just the other day I picked him up from daycare and he's got like, his nose is all messed up and whatever. But he has really started like playing with how far he can pull the corners of his mouth back into his jaw. So instead of just like, you know, a curling up of the lips, he's now like really pulling them back and like kind of exploiting the very, very corners of his mouth. And he kind of looks like the Joker a bit when he really puts it on, because he also now is at that point where he can like force a smile instead of it always just being like organic. Natural. He can do something and then like put on a smile because it's either mischievous or whatever. And it's just this really toothy grin with a wide mouth, wide lips, and just a tiny little mouth with these tiny little you know, tic-tac teeth that are spread out. And they're not close together, so you can see each one of them individually. They just look like a bunch of ghosts partying in a field.
It's like, I think that makes the kids' smiles so precious, is those just tiny little teeth that just don't they're so small, and as they get bigger, they get smaller and smaller. They just look so small.
They look tiny. Yeah. So his toothy grin has been something that has really been warming my heart lately.
Yeah, it brings a bunch of joy. I can see that. He does have a pretty big smile. My chicken soup is the... So my little one has been sick for the past week. And it's been just kind of amazing to see the amount of trust they have in you, which means when they are feeling their absolute worst, the comfort that they can get from just you. And so like, you can just feel how hurt they are or how much pain they're in. And then they really just want you as like a soothing thing. And it's really crazy the amount of trust that they have. And like, you can see why, but just to feel that trust. And there was one of these moments where it was, I don't know, 3 a.m. We're trying to get him to eat and drink water. And so he said apple, which usually means he wants applesauce. So I went and got him some applesauce, and I had a light on kind of down the hall. And so I could just see this like little silhouette of a face, and he was just calm for a second, and it was just really, really nice to just feel that calm sense of him quenching his thirst, having applesauce, and like a moment of him not crying or feeling in pain. It was just really a cool moment. And at 3 a.m, sometimes those moments really jolt you from your wherever state you're in. If you're tired, it just like warms you up. And I remember I had that same feeling when you'd go in and it'd be super late and they'd be awake and you'd be, you know, up an hour ago and they're newborn and they would like smile at you and it would just completely change your energy. You would just be like, oh, okay. It's just easier to kind of grab them and then you set them down and you go to sleep and you wake up and it's not like, oh, this is such a problem. It really just put me back into the, it just like, again, kind of humanizes you a little bit of like, what am I actually doing right now? And yeah, what's more important, my sleep or like taking care of my little one? And so it's a lot easier to go throughout your day. And so it's just these little moments I've been finding to be very helpful to just, I don't know, it's just a, it's a nice way to get through the day. And these moments that are difficult when they're sick, sometimes these things really, really keep you going in the right direction. So that was really nice.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been paying more attention to some of the young adult angst around mental health. And I was in a similar state earlier. And then it's just, and I'm not advocating for people to have kids if they're, you know, struggling with mental illness, but like in terms of a rudder around what is a value in your life and what brings meaning, it's been just such a huge change in terms of like making that equation so much more clear than it used to be.
Yeah.
Like it's just right in front of your face. You're like, oh, it's just not very many questions anymore, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, like the decisions are so much easier almost. Like there's just less you're dealing with, like, why am I here? What's the point of all this? It's really more, you have a, yeah, like you said, a rudder that helps you get going. I remember we were, you know, like he's been starting to rub your back, my back, like really, really gently. He'll come up and rub your back.
Like, petting.
He'll just walk up to me and my wife and just start like gently rubbing your back and like look over that's your shoulder
hilarious.
Like, what are you doing? And like those things you just like just totally make your day, where before I don't really know of like a moment that it just is really hard to think of something that would impact me that strong. And it's just like he wants to check on how you're doing and he doesn't know any better, but it's pretty amazing the impact they have, and they are, you know, they're truly a gift, and it's just fun and sometimes it's exhausting and tiring, but it is, you know, I'm really glad. And like you said, you need to advocate it to solve a current problem that you have, because it
That's
may
not
make
it.
That problem worse
for
but
sure.
It definitely has helped, I'd say, the growth and helped you with some meaning questions. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Well, that's all we got for you today, folks. Tune in next week when we'll be back kicking it here in the Rumpus Room.